My name is Katie Bridger and I'm a PhD student at the University of Leicester. To me, staff-student collaboration would ideally be a relationship based on trust. That way, any problems that might come up can be resolved and any successes can be celebrated, both creating a sense of achievement.
Staff-student collaboration, it really means to me communication and interaction. There's a two-way stream of interaction between students and staff. And that most important point is actually to require student engagement. And that's the main challenge, to get students engaged, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. When students are interested, then we can have a communication. Then we can communicate about things and we can talk about things. And that then leads to improvements, to changes, challenges my attitudes, challenges what I do and how I can implement or how I can change things.
First year biology student, and I believe the student staff collaboration is about students' voices being heard by the staff at the university.
Today we're here to talk about the theme of student staff collaboration and student partnership as part of a reinterpretation of a conference report of an event that was held earlier this year at SOAS on the theme of students as partners. And this is all part of the first issue of the Journal for Learning and Teaching in Higher Education. My name is Nicola Blacklaws. I'm a PhD student in the History Department here at Leicester, and I'm one of the reinterpretation authors working on the journal.
My name is Najma Mohammed. I'm a neuroscience student at the University of Leicester, and I'm also a reinterpretation author working on this piece.
My name's Az Abdullah, and I'm the Education Officer of the Suits Union.
And I'm Frances Deepwell, and I'm the Director of the Leicester Learning Institute.
And I'm Lorna Cork, and I'm the reinterpretation lead from a staff perspective for where I work in the School of Education.
Let's get into it then. So what we thought we would do is start with asking the people who we have around this table what student-staff collaboration means to you in the context of university and higher education.
So, Dr. Cork, shall we start with you, as you are the author of the piece that we are going to be reinterpreting today?
Student-staff collaboration, to me, it focuses on harnessing the collective energy and the collective intellectual capacity of a group. The contention is that by collaborating, then not only are we more than the sum of each part, we form a scholarly community. And we also form a way of drawing on all the expertise within the different members. And it starts from a premise. The values are that each and every one, whether you're a student or member of staff, has some expertise and has some contribution and has some power towards this collective.
And you raise an interesting point there when you talk about power, because I think with students as partners, which is a mantra that's often used in the sector, I think it underplays the power relationship that exists between people who are positioned as staff members against student members. The staff member typically would have power of awarding marks, awarding degrees, necessarily upsets a sense of a partnership, because it's how true can the partnership be when the educational outcome is dependent on what the academic staff member would consider to be successful. So if the student was having a successful outcome, mm-hmm. but was not getting that acknowledged by the staff member, then that would not be successful. Whereas the collaboration word is far less loaded rather than partnership. I think that students have an enormously rich role to play in collaborating on and in higher education.
So yeah, I agree that student-staff collaboration is vital, especially in the socio-political climate that we live in today. I think higher education institutions really set precedent for the world that we live in and can elevate or add or decrease the inequalities that we find in society. So I think that it's really important that we find ways to make sure that student-staff collaboration actually works, because although it sounds like a really nice term and it doesn't happen as much, especially with the amount of pressure put on course reps, how can we engage students to collaborate in their learning and teaching environments without feeling it's putting a pressure on their work?
I think we don't probably understand enough about student motivations to get involved in collaborations.
I think it's interesting that you brought that up, because when we had the introductory meeting for the journal, Dr. Patel asked us as students what was our motivation. She did bring up idea of having the hours put on our HEAR certificate, but the main thing that came out with everyone that was involved was that we just wanted to try something new and we wanted to build skills, and we were just interested and intrigued to see where this would go.
I think you can fall into a bit of a trap, not just I think with student staff collaboration, but with other areas of higher education, where it's easy to assume that students, particularly undergraduate students, staff, but also with postgraduates, that students will only want to engage with things that have a tangible CV career benefit. Mm-hmm. And if you can't demonstrate that to them, then they won't be interested. And I think how you described our first interactions with the journal and our expressions of our motivations shows us that's not always the case.
And certainly in terms of the workshop that I facilitated, what came across loud and clear was that what excited you about it was a sense of purpose and that word intrigue. And I think if there are ways within higher education of building more on pedagogically on developing more of a sense of intrigue, then I think that's actually very beneficial. But in terms of fostering a cultural collaboration as well, I think it's very important that we find a way of preparing everybody for the collaboration journey and make sure that it's not just based on theoretical principles, but values play such an important part. And one of the reasons I think why this has been successful is that it's based fundamentally on our values. And part of the values is making sure that it's not just the student voice, but the student voices. And that harnessing, and that's why it's collecting that, actively harnessing that energy is very important. Sometimes we can use the word partnership, but in reality, we need to deconstruct what that actually means in practice.
I was just about to say the same thing, which is how can we practically make sure that this happens
and is successful?
Academic representation, what mechanisms can we use, I guess, from a students' union point of view, but also from the institution?
One of the movements around staff-student partnership is moving away, a little bit more away from having a select few students involved in something to having the whole cohort involved. Very good work done around students helping to define their own assessment criteria. So very much embedded within the curriculum, within the norms and practices of higher education. And students have shown how they can do this really effectively. But it takes a mindset. I think Lorna's right in that it takes this understanding of getting everyone prepared for what might happen. It takes some structure, it takes some planning. The whole cohort piece that I think is really powerful.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think inclusiveness is a key theme. And I like what you said, because what can happen is that, as with other types of partnerships, you have somebody that represent themselves as an entity. Because what can happen is that the same person attends every meeting as a community representative, for example, attends every meeting and says, I am a representative of a particular course. And in reality, that voice may not actually be particularly representative of all the voices within that course or within that community. So the more we can get more people involved in voicing their concerns, voicing what they find are strengths, then the better.
I just feel like students might not think that they are empowered to actually make any sort of change or change that they will tangibly see. A lot of students might feel like, okay, well, if I make a change, it might be for the next coming students. Why should they have a better experience than me? Which is obviously a very selfish outlook. But I guess nowadays, I guess with them and like rising tuition fees, it is the mindset of most students.
It's a mindset. But I think part of what I'm trying to do, and what in all partnerships I've developed, is to develop a much more altruistic mindset.
Oh, 100%.
So really, I'm thinking that if we want to change not just the experience in university, but exchange the mindset outside of university as well. And bearing in mind that you will be the future leaders, if we don't have another discourse, then we will be continually be having the same types of angle on some of the world's issues.
And I think what's been really interesting, we have a project officer who's come in to help us identify what partnerships go on across the university. Mm-hmm. In the interview, it was very clear that he was coming at it from a very, very inclusive perspective that was quite a world apart from some of the conversations that had been going on prior to that.
Those kind of
conceptions are ones that I really want us to be moving towards.
Absolutely. And to me, this project is a microcosm of that, because if you notice the way I facilitated, it was very much in a collaborative type of stance, but also in terms of pedagogically, it's putting in things such as building on some of the technical capital. For example, some people had more expertise technologically, but it's building on that and being able to say, well, okay, but all I can do is trigger and stimulate and point and signpost, but I have every trust that we would get to this stage, and you've earned that trust.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to empowerment. So if students feel like they're part of something, then not only will the most engaged engage, but also we're trying to engage the ones that aren't really feeling that education is for them and accessible.
That empowerment is really important because when we've had the workshops for the journal, especially in the last one we had about the reinterpretation, you asked us at the beginning, how well do we understand this role? And then at the end of the workshop, you asked us again. And it was through you teaching us, this is what we want to do for the journal. These are the skills that you might need. That empowered us to then go, well, actually, we can achieve this. And we went off in groups. I'm a final year student, yet Nicola is a PhD student, but we've managed from just the fundamentals that you've put down to come together in this collaboration to build this.
And that was precisely the aim.
Yeah, and we're different disciplines as well.
Exactly.
The Students' Union enables a lot of interdisciplinary groups coming together.
Right.
But then they're not necessarily thinking about educational or academic outcomes. So by pulling people together around a journal idea, I think it's got the benefit of both pieces. But you're very few in number, and it's only one journal. And I just do wonder how we can then cascade some of this learning.
I think, the main thing about the why it worked is coming back to what Dr. Pork said about shared values in your report. It doesn't matter what discipline we're from. It doesn't matter that we are students and you are both respected academics. But the fact that we had shared values and we knew from the beginning what our aims were, then I feel like we could go on step by step and achieve what
absolutely. And part of that, we actually co-constructed some of those aims as well.
But
in terms of sustainability, I see this as a leader, because my background is educational leadership, is modelling the kind of leadership that I'd like to be transforming you and the way you operate, so some of the lessons learned from here, because in the same way I have actually built on the collaborative style of supervision that I had, and I think role models are really important in that respect.
So in the Students' Union, our role is to represent students and to make sure that we advocate for rights and priorities that students want. The Students' Union is very action now, and I feel like the institution is very action tomorrow, but we're finding ways to kind of maybe work together to
absolutely
push
again,
the change.
That's right. A part of this, I think,
that is, works practically.
It does, and it's having a very strategic approach as well in terms of a positive strategic leadership where we're actually looking beyond just tomorrow. One of the things about this project that has been in some ways a very challenging is that in sometimes I've actually believed that it looks like we're expecting clarity, and in reality we're co-constructing, and in the world of co-construction that clarity is not always there all the time. It's for us to refocus on and try to clarify together.
I think you've articulated that really clearly along the journey, which has been really a major sort of benefit to your leadership in this role. Do you feel, as is saying, the university works on the principle of, you know, student voice will gather feedback, will then feed forward to the next module and the next run of the module, and whether you've experienced any student voice activity that has felt more...
Are you talking about outside of the journal, like student voice?
Just generally
that's more
external
to this project.
I personally don't feel like my student voice has been heard in the way that it has been in this journal, because my own experience of me others hearing my student voice has been through surveys, perhaps at the end of modules or at the end of year, a case of ticking boxes, and it's not always just a case of point blank. But with this journal, it's been dialogue from the beginning of this course, and I feel like that is a lot better.
I think sometimes the voice of research postgraduates who are arts and humanities, and the reason that the fact that we're arts and humanities is relevant is because we don't have labs, so we don't have a physical place to go every day, is that I think the things that are important to us and the things, the less tangible things that make our experience as young researchers a lot more positive are often not necessarily acknowledged by the wider institution as being important. This is something that I think is more important than often people acknowledge, and that's the option for study space for arts and humanities research students. In the history department, we have it a lot better than a lot of other departments. We have buildings on Salisbury Road where there are spaces. I have a desk that's mine that I go to every day. Lots and lots of others, not just in this university, but in lots of universities, don't have that. And it's really easy to say, oh, that's not really an important thing. You can do your work anywhere. But an example that I like to give when people imply that maybe having an allocated space for you in your department isn't important is earlier this year, I was on sick leave for a while. People who weren't my supervisors noticed that I wasn't there and asked after me. My office mate was texting me to say, oh, such and such a person came in and asked where you were today. And I don't think that's a small or not important thing.
Very much about the university caring for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sense of, you know, somebody knows who you are, who's minded how you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. So I think that Leicester is kind of trying to make that particular issue.
It was only until my third year did I actually feel like there was a staff member that cared about me. Didn't have a connection with my personal tutor, and didn't have a connection with any staff member, really, because it's just a lot of students.
Well, exactly, that's exactly it.
Until final year, where my dissertation made me feel.
Yeah, and I think that there's also something that's not very tangible, but makes you feel really good about people who aren't your allocated person being interested in you.
My department, what you're saying here speaks to two really key agendas that I'm not too much talking in terms of agendas, but they're really what we are trying to foster in the university. One is around academic community, and that includes undergraduates as well as postgraduates, and the other is around spaces where that can happen. So we're just putting in place we're implementing a learning spaces strategy, which is trying to physically construct places where students can feel, this is where I can go, and I will meet people who are experts in this place. It won't be a sort of bland space which is a pop-up classroom. It will be a place that belongs to that discipline, that has some sense, I suppose, of an understanding of what does academic work look like in this discipline. How does that feel? Well, I'll go there and I'll absorb it, and I will become part of that, I'm part of that community just from being there.
And it also triggers another collaborative, and what I'm finding in this group is interesting. It's almost like this, you're working on this as a reinterpretation, but there's another collaborative three, and you're working just on that spaces, and they've taken photographs of learning spaces as reinterpreting an article. So that's quite interesting. But when you talked about the themes, I thought we were going to talk about the theme of belonging, because within the literature and within the Higher Education Academy and the general literature, then this theme of belonging keeps coming up, and I think that's really worth interrogating. And again, part of my underlying values, but my values come from, and I think perhaps that's partly why this is somewhat different. My values also come from working elsewhere other than in universities. There is also, Fullan talks about moral purpose. So it's part of that moral purpose to try and create a sense of belonging. Belonging, if we want to retain more students, because what we do find that there are certain groups in particular less likely to want to stay in universities in general. We're not talking about University of Leicester in particular. Then if we're going to look at that retention, then I think creating that sense of belonging is one aspect that's worth exploring. And obviously we can't go into too much detail in just this podcast. From the student's perspective, because again, in terms of a co-learning approach, then it's learning from you. So we have the policy, we have various theories, but how does that sync with what students are experiencing?
After reflecting on our experiences of student-staff collaboration and our ideas, I think it would be fitting for us to finish on what would we class as a successful student partnership. So, Francis, would you like to...
I would class a successful student partnership as not being seen as some big project that you have to undertake. It's just a shift in perspective. It's a shift in the way you understand relations with students. And so for me, it's a mindset, it's a value set.
So, Dr. Paul?
I believe that success is going to be longer term as well. So at the moment, we feel that this is successful, and on many levels it is. And I would like to think that, say, 5 years' time, or in 10 years' time, you as leaders and shapers of this new changing world would still have shaped your way of leading, of thinking within this complex environment.
I was just going to quickly say sorry. the concept of how universities are becoming increasingly diverse and how learning and teaching and curriculum should really be explored in terms of making sure that that matches the diversity as a tagline in terms of marketing. Universities really need to be working harder to make sure that with rising tuition fees that students actually feel part of the spaces that they pay so much to be in.
I think the thing that would make me most excited about us, about student staff collaborations, is the inclusion of people from across the academic spectrum, from able to include undergraduates, postgraduates, early career researchers, established academics, that there's room for international students, there's room for distance learners, being able to collaborate in a way that enables all of those different groups to be a part of the work that you're doing.
On that note, before we end the podcast, we couldn't have ended it on a better note.